be stricken from the records.
Objection sustained.
If it please the court, Your Honor, at this time I would like to introduce my three main witnesses.
Request granted. Proceed with the testimony.
All right, we shall proceed. Coming to you live from the iHeart Studios in West Palm Beach, Florida. Welcome to Lifestyles and the Law Today. This show is for informational and entertainment purposes only and does not constitute legal advice. Good day to you. I'm Alan Mason, your host and witness number one, along with witness number two, our show producer, Rick Snyder. And you, my good friend, are the witness that we count on more and more. This is the place where the coolest legal minds gather for the latest legal news and time-saving tips, along with the latest community information. Our mission is educating those in need of legal representation with a solid base of top legal minds and law scholars. You know, speaking of legal minds, Rick, do you know how many lawyers it takes to change a light bulb?
Can we tell lawyer jokes on this show?
I guess we can.
Go ahead.
It takes three. One to change it, and two to keep interrupting by standing up and shouting, "I object!"
Oh, no.
You know, if the intent of the joke is to poke fun at oneself, one might ask, is the predominant message of the joke a positive one? Well, does the light bulb message say our firm will use three people to do the job of one? I don't think so. Fact of the matter is, it doesn't and shouldn't take three lawyers to change a light bulb. That's how many lawyers it takes to change a light bulb. Well, then, how many are you going to send to a deposition? Or, if you're involved in an accident and your headlight is smashed, who would you get to settle that thing and make it straight? Well, let's face it, the only time you need legal representation is after you're injured. And if you are injured, the first priority at the Robes Law Group is getting you well and putting your life back in order. That's how the light bulbs work over at the Robes Law Group. If you've been injured, make contact with the mothership by calling 561-570-5700. Their offices are located in Delray Beach and throughout Palm Beach County, or you may visit their website at robeslawgroup.com. Coming up on today's show, Anna Marie Mitchell is back with us again, and she's here to discuss everything you need to know about tax controversy. She knows more about taxes than a block of H's and R's and a can of alphabet soup. Then Rick Snyder checks in with all the satisfied Robes clients who have had happy results, and that's coming right up. And Florida nudes are in the news, and you can take that to the beach right next to the giant sandcastle. And in our Hammer the Scammer segment today, we'll take a look at how scammers use bait and switch on Airbnb reservations to get you into a lousy accommodation. That's coming right up after the news. And gamophobia. In 35 minutes, we'll stick together through thick and thin. Gamophobia. Don't be afraid to look that up. It'll stay with you forever. Just a friendly reminder, tell a friend about the show or invite them to listen. As always, free shipping every Saturday from 2 to 3 right here on AM 1290 WJNO. But right now, let's take a look at South Florida's latest legal headlines brought to you by the Robes Law Group, your community-approved brain trust. Here with today's headlines is our consistently random voice of wisdom and full-time news orator, Rick Snyder.
Thank you, Alan.
You bet.
Florida State Senator says nude tourism has a billion-dollar potential for the Sunshine State's economy and wants to make clear that it's okay to be naked at a nude beach. Wow. Clothing-optional beaches are up and down the coastline.
Yeah, you know where there's a few of them, don't you?
I have a list right here, Alan. Is that what you're getting at?
Yeah.
Florida's no-fault auto insurance system is again on the chopping block in the legislature. Despite industry concerns, the proposed change wouldn't lower premiums. So we've got several good legal stories to talk about 20 minutes from now.
Okay. Well, we'll do that. When we return, Anna Marie Mitchell is with us. Have a question about tax controversy? We are live and the phone lines are open. 561-570-5700. Don't go back. We'll be right away. Personal injury attorneys regularly inundate the airwaves with money-making rants, guaranteeing their clients huge settlements. Call now is their air horn. We make money only if you do is tattooed on their foreheads. Had enough? The Robes Law Group offers sound legal guidance and direction. They work hard for you because it's the right thing to do. What you say or don't say at the scene of an accident matters. Wouldn't it be great if your lawyer was right there with you to guide you through this confusing moment? That's why the Robes Law Group developed a smartphone application. You can download the Robes Law Group app from the App Store or simply text the word ROBES to 474747. That's ROBES. Text to 474747. or call the Robes Law Group today at 561-570-5700. That's 561-570-5700. Or check out their website at robeslawgroup.com. Okay, welcome back to Lifestyles and the Law Today. I'm Ellen Mason, your host and non-legal orator, here to introduce a few happy people. Rick, do you have a list of the happy folk?
I do.
I believe we get that from their Facebook page.
That's correct.
Facebook.com/Robes Law Group.
Very good. Okay. And we have Sema Arif Ozdemir, who says, the Robes Law Group did an unbelievable job representing my case. Esteban and Loran kept me informed of everything throughout the entire process. They're extremely professional and knowledgeable. I highly recommend them to everybody who's involved in a car accident.
Nice.
And again, Esteban and Loran were mentioned by Marlene Bachman-Frankel. She says they went above and beyond to settle our case after it was mishandled by another attorney. They kept us updated throughout the process. Very important when you're dealing with an attorney in an injury case. Not only did they give us helpful advice, they did the impossible and managed to obtain a good settlement after all benefits were exhausted.
Wow.
And that ain't easy, folks.
That's what they do over there, you know. Esteban, he's been on the show a bunch of times, and he tells us like it is. He makes sure everybody's taken care of. Folks, if you're looking for a happy outcome, call the good folks at Robes Law Group, 561-570-5700, or again, visit their Facebook page at facebook.com/Robes Law Group.
Here's our next super guest on Lifestyles and the Law Today, brought to you by Robes Law Group of Delray Beach, Florida.
All right, let's bring on our first super guest. She earned her master's degree in tax law from the University of Florida, a law degree from St. Thomas University with a specialization in taxes. She has successfully reduced taxpayer liabilities in excess of $71 million, that's million with an M, to date. And she is certified to practice law in front of the Florida Supreme Court, the Federal District Court, and the U.S. Tax Court. She is well qualified to handle any tax issue. Anna Marie Mitchell, welcome to Lifestyles and the Law Today.
Thank you for having me again. I'm excited to be here.
You know, we had a lot of positive calls when you were on the last time, and I guess the biggest message we got was people didn't know that there are about 12 different agencies collecting taxes for the IRS. You blew a lot of people's minds when you told us that.
Yeah, I get phone calls all the time about, I had someone call me and they say that I owe IRS debt, but I've always been told the IRS doesn't call. And, you know, that was true for, dozens and dozens of years, but now recently that's changed. So, yeah, they'll call you for sure.
Well, how do we get on that list? No, I don't want to be one of those guys. But yeah, that's got to be a tough job. But I am really shocked. And so were a lot of people. A lot of people called and wanted to know that. Is that true? Do they really have a private collection agency working for the government? Wow. That's something else.
What's so difficult about dealing with that, too, is if you want to try and either negotiate your debt down or you want to talk to someone about why you owe that much, the debt collection agency doesn't know anything except, hey, Joe Smith owes this much and we need to get the money. But if you need to ask questions or you want to try and settle or anything like that, you have to request that debt be sent back to the IRS, even to get the IRS to talk with you about the debt. So it's not a very good system. They have a lot of kinks they need to work out in regards to that.
Yeah, I think so. If that's the case, you should be able to talk to someone who can either reduce. I guess that's why you're here, right?
Yeah.
That's what you do. All right. Well, a lot of people may not know just exactly what a tax controversy and resolution attorney is, and that's what you are. Would you explain that for our guests?
Yeah, sure. So the tax controversy aspect of my business is when I have someone that does not agree with what the IRS is stating about the debt. So let's say that the IRS is engaging in an audit, or the IRS has completed an audit and you don't agree with the findings, it's the controversy of going back and forth on the underlying debt. And so whether that's an audit, appeal, an audit reconsideration, tax court litigation, anything like that is a controversy where you're fighting with the IRS about what's going on, what's the amount, and why. Then the resolution aspect of my business is we recognize we have a debt, and we recognize that that debt is correct, or alternatively, it's not worth fighting about it. Mm-hmm. And so now we have this debt, and what can we do about it? Can we settle it? Do I need a payment plan? Can I try and get rid of some of it, because maybe some of it was penalties, and I'm disagreeing with maybe just a small portion of that? So the controversy is the fight, and the resolution is about peacefully resolving, now what can we do about this debt?
Wow, that sounds like I need a warranty plan to take care of that, right? Actually, you are that warranty plan, aren't you?
I think so. Absolutely. A lot of my clients think so, too. You know, they get a lot of peace of mind by paying for professional representation when they have an ongoing issue, whether controversy or resolution.
You know, I said in your intro that you have reduced taxpayer liabilities in excess of $71 million. Explain that. What do you mean? One client, you saved $71 million, or it was a whole bunch of clients? How's that work?
No, it's a whole bunch of clients over a whole bunch of years that I've been doing this. And just yesterday I found out we settled $14,242 for someone, and we settled that for $10. So, you know, my number keeps going up. But there was one client, the largest one debt settlement that I've done was $2.1 million. Settled for $10, and that is a big chunk of that $71 million. But no,
right.
It's generally small business owners, small to medium sized business owners, that the taxes kind of got away from them, or they didn't have proper accounting. And generally, the average client owes more than $10,000, and that's between $10,000 and $150,000 is where I get most of my clients. I have a few now, you know, $1.2 million, $850,000. But generally, the people that are calling me are between $10,000 and $150,000.
That's sort of the average amount. Wow, that's still a lot of money to have to owe to the government. That means you must have made a lot of money, right?
Well, not enough to cover my student loans, but that's, I guess, another topic.
don't get me started on the student loans, please. How do I know if I'm having an issue with the IRS? You know, all the letters they send out kind of look the same. Is there any special thing I should, especially, you know, we talk about scammers a lot on the program. So how do I know if I'm getting a scam letter or I'm getting a real IRS letter?
Yeah, that's a great question. So at my firm, we give free consultations, and generally the consultation will start with what is the notice number on the top right-hand corner of the letter, or alternatively, you know, fax me the letter and I can look at it. But generally, a letter from the IRS is going to have the IRS emblem on it. It's going to have a notice number. It will have your Social Security number. Now, from the debt collection agencies, they actually don't have your Social Security number on it. It references a tax ID number that's not your social. So it's a little more difficult to tell if it's a real letter when it's coming from a debt collection agency that's been outsourced by the IRS. So with those, I recommend calling the IRS to verify if you have a debt. Or alternatively, you know, reach out to a tax controversy attorney that gives free consultations, because they'll be able to tell you right away if it's legitimate or not, and they should do that for free. So,
yeah. Do you have a special phone line that rings right into the IRS? Because I know the last time I called, I spent like an hour and a half on hold.
Yeah. luckily, you know, as a tax practitioner, they do have what's called a practitioner priority service line.
There you go.
For registered practitioners that are trying to effectively resolve issues with the IRS for their clients. So I do have, I wish it was my own private number, you know, but I do have a way to get in for quick phone calls. So that is a, you know, a blessing.
Well, for a guy making a lot of bucks and running a company, and an hour on hold, it cost him more than what it would take to have you do it. I'm pretty sure about that. Hey, if a letter comes to me certified from the IRS, do they send out certified letters?
Yes, actually, generally a certified letter is going to come in two cases. In the resolution aspect, it's going to come 30 days before they intend to levy your account. So there's a series of collection letters that will be sent out regular mail. And then when that last collection letter comes out, which is basically like, hey, we haven't heard from you, and we're going to start to take money in 30 days, that letter comes certified. And then also another kind of letter that generally will come certified is what is called a statutory notice of deficiency, or a stat notice. And that is after the IRS has audited you, and they're only required to send you regular correspondence for an audit, especially if it's what's called a correspondence exam. So the audit and the appeal time for that audit, that comes regular mail. But then the stat notice, which is your last opportunity to fight the IRS on the debt, which is, and then you're, the only way you can fight that debt is you have to go to tax court. That stat notice also comes certified, and then you have 90 days to respond to the IRS about the audit or the substance of the appeal, or whatever it was. So there's two big letters that will come certified, the CP 504, the last collection notice, and then your stat notice, which is, you know, in the business, we call it your ticket to tax court.
I thought I had a ticket to ride, so I guess a tax court, ooh, that's not so good. Folks, you have a question for Anna? You can call right now at 561-570-5700. If it's a tax question or a tax controversy question, she's ready to go, so give us a call. Hey, what if I don't agree with the amount that the IRS says they owe? Hey, you owe $100,000. I don't think so. What do I do now?
So if the IRS has assessed the liability, meaning that they either audited you or there was an automatic under return exam that happened, but either way, the liability is like quote unquote on the books. If you disagree with that, then most generally people will engage in what is called an audit reconsideration. However, if it's still within 30 days of when that original assessment or when they wanted to do the assessment from the audit, you could do an appeal. But most people, because they don't think that a letter really means an audit, and they think, like, if I'm really going to get audited, then someone's going to come knock on my door, or it's going to be more official than that, and they miss all those deadlines because they're waiting for that knock on the door or whatever it is, then generally the procedure to fight that liability would be through an audit reconsideration.
Wow. You know what? It's almost like playing Monopoly. You have to know the rules if you want to play the game. And I don't have a person sitting next to me with the rules when I play Monopoly, but I think when I'm messing around with the IRS, it'd be better to have somebody sitting there that knows the rules, and you know the rules. So what can the IRS do if I owe them? I mean, can they come beat me up, or what do they do?
Well, the biggest thing that I do when clients call me is I let them know, listen, there's really no, like, debtor's jail, okay? So is
Thank
the IRS
goodness.
Going to throw you in prison because you owe?
Yeah.
No. When the IRS does engage in some sort of, like, criminal investigation where someone could end up serving time, it's generally because there's some sort of, like, tax fraud or tax evasion scheme. But generally just owing, you know, and you've either self-reported it or the IRS has come in and reported for you, The biggest thing that will happen is either a wage levy or wage garnishment if you're working for an employer where they'll garnish up to 80% of your wages per pay period, or alternatively then what's called a bank levy where they'll take the proceeds from your bank account. Mm-hmm. And those are generally the biggest way. They also will file a lien, but that's not a taking action. That's not like a seizure.
Right.
A lien is just, you know, that piece of paper that's public record that lets, you know, the world know that you have an outstanding debt. But, you know, one of the reasons why I wanted to come on the show this time is because I really wanted to talk about finding a good tax preparer and what it means to find someone that's qualified to help you with your taxes. Because where I come in is down the road. You've used someone that wasn't good to file your return, or you didn't understand what was going on, or you didn't have good accounting. But there's a lot of prep work that your audience can do to make sure that doesn't happen. And one of the things that I would strongly recommend during this tax time is that you use a licensed tax preparer. And a licensed tax preparer is either going to be one that is a CPA, a certified public accountant. Alternatively, you could use an attorney, although you know, I don't know why you would. They would charge you more. I don't, you know, I'm not trying to sell tax return preparation at my rate. And then a lot of people, they should look at what are called enrolled agents. Enrolled agents have taken a special test with the IRS and are certified to file returns. Where a lot of people get in trouble is they go to those tax preparation places that are waving the signs that are like, you know, it says $3,500 a refund per child, and they're not educated by the IRS, they're not overseen by the IRS, and they just operate for a tax season, shut down and open a new place next tax season so they don't get in trouble. And your audience needs to be very careful about who they're using to prepare their returns.
Right. You know, last week, it was last week or the week before? Last week, we talked about ghost preparers, people that do just that. They open up, do your tax return, and then they're gone. And it's sort of like take the money and run, I believe. You know, we talk a lot about make it sound like this is a notorious action we're doing. How about just the honest mistake? If you just make an honest mistake and then the IRS comes down on you, is that an excuse? Can you go, hey, I didn't know. It was an honest mistake. I don't know.
You know, that's a really good question. So generally, when the IRS comes in and does a recalculation, if there's an audit or generally what's called like an automatic underreporter evaluation, the IRS is forced by statute to assess penalties. And there's two types of penalties generally that you'll see in this kind of scenario. One is you're going to have like a substantial underreporter penalty, where if you've underreported over 20% of the taxable income, you get assessed with a penalty. And then you also get a penalty for failing to either file or pay, depending on what it is. Now, that kind of punishment, okay, so not the tax that you owe, but the extra punishment, which is right, through a penalty, okay, that's in addition to the tax. The IRS does have some mechanisms available to what is called abate that penalty or remove that penalty.
Oh, that's cool.
So if it's a first time, honest to goodness mistake, I didn't know, or it was a really bad time in my life, I couldn't file, or even if the argument is, you know, I didn't know that a certain event was taxable, you know, and I didn't know, I didn't get that tax document to file, you know, those kinds of first time arguments. Generally, you can get the penalty removed or abated through a first-time penalty abatement argument, okay? And you don't really need an attorney to do that. I mean, it would be better. You would more likely prevail. But a lot of first-time penalty abatements can be done self-represented. Now, there's another kind of penalty abatement, which is when it's not your first time, but it's reasonable. And that would be a reasonable cause penalty abatement. And you generally do want to be represented for those. But there are mechanisms where you're like, hey, IRS, I really made a mistake. I didn't mean to. And they'll work with you, you know, the first time. If it's a second or third time in the same issue, you may have an uphill battle. But, you know, certainly there's options available.
You don't want to be thrown into the penalty box, that's for sure. Hey, we're going to have to take a quick break here if you can hang on. And folks, if you have a question about tax law, tax controversy, call right now, 561-570-5700. Anna Marie Mitchell is standing by.
If you could prepare for an accident, it wouldn't be called an accident, would it? According to the U.S. Department of Transportation, more than 6 million traffic accidents occur every year. Cars, trucks, or motorcycles, it happens. The real question is, if it happens to you, what will you do? Statistics show the sooner you have legal representation, the better the outcome of your case. Wouldn't it be great if your lawyer was right there with you to guide you through this confusing moment? What you say or don't say at the scene of an accident matters. That's why the Robes Law Group developed a smartphone application. You can download the Robes Law Group app from the App Store or simply text the word ROBES to 474747. That's ROBES, text to 474747. Or call the Robes Law Group today at 561-570-5700. That's 561-570-5700. Or check out their website at robeslawgroup.com.
All right, we're going to check that out. Coming up on the second half of the show, Anna Marie Mitchell is still with us. Have a tax controversy question. This is your chance to ask the expert. And we are live, and the phone lines are open, 561-570-5700. And then our show producer will tell us how bait-and-switch scams work in the Airbnb locations. Wait until you hear this one. Hammer the Scammer segment coming right up. But right now, it's time for all the news that maybe shouldn't be news, brought to you by the Robes Law Group of Delray Beach. Download their smartphone app by texting the word ROBES, that's R-O-B-E-S, to 474747. Rick Snyder, our show producer, has a beach bucket full of funny stuff. What's going on in the world of lawlessness?
Well, as we mentioned earlier, nudes are in the news here in Florida. Florida State Senator says nude tourism has $1 billion potential in the Sunshine State's economy, and wants to make clear that it's okay to be naked at a nude beach. Many areas permit clothing optional beaches, and the state has at least, get this, 34 nude resorts. Resorts.
Wow.
We're not telling you where they are.
I already have the list.
There are. I knew you would. There are cases in which people have been arrested and charged for being nude at a nude beach. What they're trying to do is eliminate that from happening because they want to make it legal to be nude at a nude beach.
I think I'd be worried about the sunburn.
Oh, no. Yes. bring your suntan lotion. The state's nude resort industry already attracts more than 2.2 million tourists a year, and nude beaches generate an economic impact of as much as $7 billion. The Miami area Haulover Beach, the number two nude beach in the world, generates more than $980,000 in parking fees alone for the Miami area. Florida's no-fault auto insurance system is again on the chopping block in the legislature. Despite industry concerns, the proposed change wouldn't lower premiums, as backers contend, and could increase lawsuits and health insurance rates. The House Insurance and Banking Subcommittee backed a measure that would replace a requirement that motorists carry personal injury protection. We've talked about PIP here on the show, with mandatory bodily injury coverage. It's called MedPay. Now, right now, you still are required to carry $10,000 in personal injury protection coverage, an amount unchanged since 1979.
Wow.
So this is on the table at the legislature right now. You could save as much as 8 to 9% if this goes through. And here's your kicker, Alan, for Louisiana residents. This is a state law in Louisiana. It's illegal to steal someone else's crawfish. But now it's really illegal. Meriting its own state law, crawfish theft in excess of $1,500 can land the offender with up to 10 years in prison time or a $3,000 fine. But mostly they'll have to endure the humiliation of being called shellfish for the rest of their life.
Oh, God.
That's our news. Back to you.
Oh, that's a lot of Zydeco music right there.
You got it. Oh, yeah.
All right.
Here's our next super guest on Lifestyles and the Law Today, brought to you by Robes Law Group of Delray Beach, Florida.
All right. Anna Marie Mitchell is still with us. As I said earlier, she earned her degree, a master's degree in tax law from the University of Florida and a law degree from St. Thomas University with specialization in taxes. That means she just knows a lot about taxes. Anna, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
All right. Well, you said earlier that you were going to tell us how to select a good tax preparer, and you mentioned that you should look for the license and the people that have the right training. Is there anything else we need to know? I mean, are any of the standard, I don't want to mention any of the names of these companies that everybody, the alphabet soup stuff, but how do you know they're good?
Well, one of the things that I would recommend that you do is not go to someone because they can, quote unquote, like guarantee a larger refund. Mm. The amount of a tax refund that would be available to you, if any, is based on, it's a standard thing. It's based on income, it's based on number of children, it's based on other events that maybe you qualify for, like the birth of an additional child or putting your child in care, and having like aftercare expenses. So you don't want to go to someone because your friend says, hey, I used, you know, Jane Smith down the road, and I got a $7,500 refund, and so you should go to her. Because it's not like that. And those kinds of places that advertise the amount of refund they can get you, and it's like a set amount per child, that's not accurate. And those kinds of places will not be there in 2 to 3 tax seasons from now for you to go back. And the IRS is not going to care that you went to that tax preparer and you didn't know your tax preparer prepared it. You know, the IRS is not going to care. The IRS is going to look at you to refund that money, and you're not going to have, you know, two legs to stand on because you didn't understand how refunds work. And that's, you know, another big thing is it's not okay in this day and age when so much information is available online for you to blindly go into tax season. You know, a little bit of research on, you know, the types of situations that result in a refund or what you're allowed to claim, you know, and not claim as an expense deduction. It's really important to be aware. And it's those that are not aware that rely on other people that are not qualified, not licensed, or not educated. And again, the IRS is not going to care that ignorance is not an answer for the IRS. They're going to look at you for that repayment and just don't get caught. You know, do a little bit of research. Make sure you go to a licensed tax preparer and don't think that just because you have 3 kids that you're going to get a $75, you know, or $10,000 refund. It doesn't work like that.
And like we said last week on the scammer report there, make sure that your preparer signs the return. Because it would be a little easier on you? Is that the good answer?
Well, generally you want to have a preparer that not only is licensed with the IRS, because the IRS keeps track of them, they care about that, the person that has that license cares to make sure that they do a good job, but also you want to make sure if you're going to a tax preparer and you're paying for that service, you want their name and phone number and signature to appear under that paid preparer line, which is underneath where you sign the return, or let's say that you e-file or they e-file for you. You still should get a paper copy, and it should still have their signature, and this is why. Because let's say that you get audited or something happens because of a mistake that a preparer made. Now, you can't get, like, a monetary remedy, but if they signed it and you have that return preparer information, you could certainly file a return preparer misconduct request with the IRS, and that may help you when it comes to penalties. Let's say that you went somewhere and that person made a mistake on the return. They signed it. You have their info. The IRS comes and does an audit, and you now you owe money back and penalties. Well, you could say, listen, I had no idea. I want the penalties removed. I understand maybe that refund wasn't legitimate. Okay, so I owe some money back, but not the penalties. And hey, now go after this guy because he signed my return. But if you go somewhere, pay, they don't sign, or alternatively, it says self-prepared, which means that it's as if you didn't really pay someone for that guidance, you're going to have a much harder time with that penalty abatement argument because what's your reasonable cause? You know, no one signed that. So it's important, you know, get the information of who you're paying for your return. Make sure that their PTIN, their paid tax preparer identification number is on that return, that they've signed it. All those things are important. You know, keep your refunds in the filing cabinet. All that stuff's important.
Sure. What about tax software? Like the, again, I don't want to mention any company's name, but there are a lot of people that sell software that helps you prepare your taxes. Is that a good route to go?
I think that you preparing your own taxes using tax software can certainly save someone money. And if you know what you're doing and you follow, a lot of times they'll have like an interview prompt and it will go question by question. Then yes, you should do it. You know, save yourself some money if you can. But what you don't want to do is you don't want to sit there on the software and kind of play with the numbers so you get a big refund. Because lots of times I've had clients, you know, you're laughing, but I've had clients that are audited And I, you know, I go and start prepping for the audit, you know, the audit interview or whatnot. And it's so clear that none of those numbers make sense. I mean, where could they have gotten them, you know? So definitely don't do that. But if you're, let's say like you're a W-2 worker and you're getting a W-2 and you only have like maybe a mortgage interest statement or something, like you've got a few tax documents, go ahead and do the return yourself. But if you have rental property or you're receiving like a K-1, you know, don't do those returns yourself. You know, those are a little more complicated. There's a lot of potential for errors. But if you have a more simplistic filing, for sure, you know, use the software, go and do it yourself. Oh, and you know, one other thing I wanted to mention is for anyone where their household family income is less than $60,000 combined, you can actually get your taxes done for free through what's called a VITA program, Volunteer Income Taxpayer Assistance Programs. If you Google IRS VITA location, you can go, the IRS pays, or these people are volunteers, and they'll do your taxes for free. And the it's an IRS program that they, it's like a public service program that they have. Yeah. So if you're a simplistic filer, you know, you're like a W-2 and your income is, a combined household income is less than $60,000, go get your taxes done for free.
Yeah, that's great. We have a caller. John is on the line. He has a couple of questions on deductions. John, are you, you're on the air.
Yes. My name's John, and my question is I was in a lawsuit for 3 years, won the lawsuit, paid my attorney for that lawsuit $65,000. I wanted to know if that is, can I write that off, that $65,000 against the total amount of the lawsuit? You know what I'm saying? I get so much money, but I had to pay my attorney $65,000, so I did not get all my money back. Do I pay? Can I write that off, the $65,000?
So that's a great question. One of the ways that you started with that question though was, can you write that $65,000 off against the money that you won or, you know, earned from the lawsuit? So you can't necessarily, depending on the type of lawsuit it was. Okay. Those gains from the lawsuit will either be taxable or non-taxable. But what certainly is allowed as at least an itemized deduction are attorney's fees. So you can, even if that income, let's say that income was non-taxable income, okay, then generally you're going to have an issue with the attorney's fees because that's going to result in an overall reduction of income when you're not reporting the proceeds from the lawsuit. So that situation, no. But let's say that the proceeds from the lawsuit are taxable, then at least at a minimum, you can get those attorney's fees in as a deduction under an itemized deduction. Now, generally, depending again on the type of lawsuit, you can take those attorney's fees against the total proceeds. So now it really is reducing the earnings of the proceeds. But let's say that the type of lawsuit it is, you can't do that, but it's still taxable, okay, then for sure get those attorneys in as an itemized deduction.
Wow.
Okay. Can I ask you another one? A little bit. It's the same lawsuit. The lawsuit was for a lot of money. Can I ask this question or no?
Go ahead.
I'll give you the exact number. I won the lawsuit for $2.3 million. In the lawsuit, they filed bankruptcy. My attorney, his attorney, and the judge said to me, they are willing to try to, if you want to, you can reduce this. So I took less money to make it go, you know, to get my money back and get some of it. Otherwise, I would have had to wait until they went through their whole bankruptcy. So I took less money. Plus, I paid my attorney, and I ended up with a little profit, but I didn't end up with the $2.3 million. I ended up with less money. He owed me $2.3 million. That's what they owed me. So, what part of it can I write off? I can't write off the $2.3 million.
Right. No. Well,
go ahead.
That's a great question, and part of my answer is going to be based on what the IRS has on file in regards to that lawsuit. So let's say that the person that that you won the lawsuit against, okay, if they were going to try and write off the amount that they paid you in the lawsuit, because let's say that the lawsuit was part of the proceeds was supposed to be reimbursement for like wages or something like that. So they're going to issue you a W-2 for that. And then the other part of the proceeds is for compensation other than earnings, right? So then that person is going to issue a 1099. And the IRS has on file now. Yeah. Okay, so you got a 1099.
That's correct. Oh, every year he would send me a 1099.
Okay. So with that 1099, if that information is correct, that's what the IRS has on file. So you would, ideally what you would do to prevent an audit and assuming that that 1099 is correct, you would file your return based on that, including that 1099 miscellaneous, recognizing that income on the return, and then taking your deductions that are allowed as like an itemized attorney's fees deduction. But I think that very specific question that you have about the amount that you were initially entitled to, so the difference between the 1099 that you are receiving versus the amount that you were supposed to be received, that you were supposed to receive, and then how that compares with the attorney's fees related to defending the lawsuit and then the attorney's fees related to just trying to get some sort of settlement because they were going to be in bankruptcy. That's a very specific question, and it depends on the substance of the lawsuit, and I would recommend that you receive professional counsel in regards to that. But your very first question about can you take attorney's fees as a deduction, if that income is taxable, which if you're receiving a 1099 miscellaneous, more likely than not it is taxable, then you can take the attorney's fees as an itemized deduction. But anything more detailed than that answer really is an individual situation where you should seek, you know, like a free consultation. Feel free to call my office, you know.
There you go. Hey, John, I just have one question for you. What are you doing for dinner later tonight? It's $1.2 million. Let's go out. Hey, thanks. I hope that answered your question. Thanks for calling in. And Anna, great, great answer. I think he's going to be a happy guy.
Thank you.
Let's talk a little bit about pre-filing preparation and all that stuff. Is that something that most tax people do or what?
Pre-filing?
No.
You mean for a tax? Sorry.
Yes. Pre-filing.
So, okay. I guess maybe I'm not as familiar with that term, but certainly before you file, you're going to want to make sure that you have your accounting completed, right? That you have profit and loss statements.
Right.
That you're not just sitting down at the computer or with your CPA with a box full of receipts. And, you know, that's another thing that I guess we should mention is sure. I've had a lot of clients that are audited or alternatively their return preparer got audited because they were bad. And then because the return preparer got audited, a lot of their clients, which is then the original taxpayer, they get audited too. If you go to your accountant with like a box or your preparer with a box full of receipts and you're not getting an itemized inventory back, like let's say either an Excel file or totals for each of those categories, you know, that means that your return preparer did not look through those receipts and add them up. Mm. And you don't want that to be you because that means that they're just inputting numbers, right, that are not substantiated by documents. And that will cost you in the end if you get audited. So one of the things I recommend, if you're one of those people that just labels a bag at the beginning of the year that says, like, receipts 2020, before you go to your tax preparer, sit there and separate out the receipts, write the total, or give the bag to your tax preparer and say, listen, I'm going to pay you to go through this, but before you file, I want to meet and see what the totals are for each category. You know, be involved in that process, in that pre-filing process, I guess. Is that kind of what you meant?
Yep, that's exactly what I meant. You cleared it up for me. I appreciate that. I know, because I'm that person. I go in with a big box and go, here, figure it out. That's what I'm paying you for. Probably not a good thing to do. Yeah. All right, Anna, listen, can you hang on just for a few more moments? We have a couple of things we have to do here, and then we will come right back to you.
Okay, great, thanks.
Good.
When you hear that sound, something bad is about to happen.
Good afternoon, this is Christina at the Rogue Law Group. How can I help you?
And that's the sound of confidence. Confidence in knowing you have selected the right team to represent you in your hour of need. The Department of Transportation tells us more than 5 million crashes occur every year. That's more than 13,600 accidents every single day, every day. So be aware of... And remember, when you need legal representation, call the good folks at Rogues Law Group at 561-570-5700. That's 561-570-5700. Or better yet, download the Rogues Law Group app by texting the word ROBES to 474747. That's ROBES to 474747.
This is Christina at the Rogues Law Group. How can I help you?
Hi, Christina. How you doing? Hey, welcome back to Lifestyles and the Law Today. I'm still Alan Mason, your host and non-legal orator. And we have, Anna, you still in there, right?
Yep.
Great, 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 because we have Dave on the line. And no, Dave just went away. Well, maybe he's calling back, I guess. Anyway, I guess his phone line might be a cell phone or something like that. Folks, if you call in, make sure you're in a good location where you don't get dropped. Let's see what we can do. I guess we can do the phobia thing. We always have a decent phobia there, folks. I'm
afraid of phobias.
You're afraid of phobias?
Yes.
Hey, if you have gamophobia, yes. You have a fear of commitments, and there's no cure for that, but there is a solution. Just grab your smartphone if you're not driving. Text the word ROBES, that's ROBES, to 474747, and download the ROBES Law Group app and open it. The only commitment you will find there is where ROBES is hopelessly committed to you, because ROBES Law Group has your back. They give you peace of mind knowing that legal representation is in the palm of your hand. And just a friendly reminder, when you hire ROBES from the app, you will receive a $1,000 fee credit when your case is settled. That's 1,000 smackers just for hiring ROBES from the app. I don't know how many other apps do that. All right, Dave, come back in.
No.
Nah, he's afraid of commitment. He's a gamophobia. Gamophobia.
Got Anna on the phone.
You got Anna, though. Anna, let's see here. Get my notes back in order. I have another question for you. We were talking about pre-preparing and getting ready to see your tax accountant, but what about compliance situations? Compliance, that's a pretty heavy word. Compliance to what?
Generally, you have an obligation to be in filing compliance with the IRS, and a lot of times, people will call me, they'll owe the IRS a lot of money for certain years and they want to settle, you know, their debt, which of course is a service that we offer. But you have to be in filing compliance. So what does that mean?
Yeah.
Generally, filing compliance for the IRS means that you filed the past 6 years of tax returns. And that's for an individual that needs to be in compliance, right? But then of course, there's also compliance issues for business owners, and that includes if you pay payroll, to be in compliance with your 941 and 940 filings. So compliance can mean a lot of different things depending upon the type of taxpayer that you are. Again, if you're an individual, a business owner, you know, depending upon what type of business that is, what type of entity. So you want to make sure that you're working with a licensed preparer who knows what it means for you to be in compliance and that you, you know, proactively make sure that you are in compliance. But the average taxpayer, you know, or wage earner, they're not so concerned about that because their employer makes sure that they're in compliance, right? Every time they run payroll for you and you receive a paycheck, some portion of that went to go, that FICA, your Social Security and Medicare, and then even income tax portion. So for the wage earner, compliance isn't a big issue, I would say.
Right. Follow the rules. I think that's what it is. All right, we have Dave back on the line. He got back in here. Dave, how you doing?
Yeah, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing great. You're on the air. Do you have a question for Anna?
Yes, I do. Good afternoon, Anna. I have a question regarding the required minimum distribution. I turned 70 and a half in 2018, and I took and claimed my RMD for that year in the 2019 period. However, I am not turning 72 until March, this next month. So the question is, for 2019, can I revert to not taking an RMD?
So that's a great question, and the only way that the IRS is going to know about that is on the form that your financial institution sends to the IRS, which is usually a 1099-R that you get a copy of.
Yeah.
There's a box on that form, and if it's checked for required minimum distribution, then the IRS is going to expect that you have reported a required minimum distribution. If that box is not checked, then the IRS is not going to look for it, and the IRS is not going to investigate how old you were at that time and whether you should have or shouldn't have not taken that distribution. So if it's 2018, okay, and maybe you don't have that 1099-R anymore, you can request from the IRS a copy for free of your wage and income transcript. Just Google IRS get a transcript, request a copy of your wage and income transcript from 2018, then when that prints out or is emailed to you, however you get it, go to that 1099-R for that financial institution that you're talking about, and there will be a line there that says required minimum distribution, and then a few dots, and you go to the right, and it will say box checked or unchecked or blank. If it was checked, then go back and amend and report the required minimum distribution. If it's unchecked, then leave it alone if you didn't report it, and that's the best way for you to know, okay, you know, if that's going to be a requirement for you or not.
Right. Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. That answered answered the question. What more could we ask for? Anna, you are just super. We appreciate you coming on the show and answering all these crazy questions. And I have to tell you, tax, that's the most confusing thing in the world. I can't think of anything that's worse than getting, you know, when someone new comes into your life and upsets you and scares you, usually it's the IRS, right? Nobody likes that. Well, folks, we are going to miss out on the scammer this week, but I promise you, next week we'll have that Airbnb story there, because I know a lot of people use the Airbnb. It's kind of a popular way to do things, right, Rick?
One of the things to watch out for, what they do is they ask for your money in advance. Always use the Airbnb site.
Yeah.
You won't get scammed through the official site.
Oof. Yeah. Wow. It's amazing what scammers do. Anna, again, thank you so much for being on the show. We appreciate it, and we know we're going to have you back on again because you do such a great job when you come on there.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
You bet.
Come back soon.
Come back soon, yeah. We have another little message, too. Pops is a little bit under the weather, so we're going to have to send him a soda pop to get him up and doing a little better there. That's our show producer, John Mitchell. He's sitting at home with a bad cold today. We wish he was here at the studio, but that's just not going to happen.
He'll be back.
He'll be back. I'll be back. Yeah. That's him. That's great. All right, folks. Well, I would like to thank you for listening to the show this week. Pretty dang good show, I would say. We'd like to thank you for joining us every Saturday. Your company is appreciated. Listen to Lifestyles and the Law today right here on West Palm Beach's flagship station, WJNO 1290 AM, every Saturday from 2 to 3. Tell a good friend about the show. Any friend of yours is a friend of ours, and we hope our mission was not impossible and the legal knowledge ebbs and flows throughout the applicable media outlets. The show is underwritten by Rhodes Law Group of Delray Beach, Florida, and originates from the iHeart Studios in West Palm Beach. Executive producer John Mitchell, get well. And our show producer Rick Snyder, audio engineer John Nutter, and I am your host, Alan Mason. We will sneeze you next week. Thanks for tuning in, folks.